So we're gonna get started again in just a couple of minutes. So as people can kind of filter back into the main room, I don't know if people can hear me very well in there. I hope they can. Okay, and we'll get started in just a minute here. If anybody hasn't already filled out the little the membership slips, come on up and take the opportunity to do that, or do it right as we break in a little bit, and we'll have a drawing for prizes. Okay, I think as people start to filter in, we want to get going. We want to give some time so that Cascade will have a chance to actually talk to us. A couple of really quick things that we want to take care of ahead of time. The first one is just to mention that the Audio Engineering Society Pacific Northwest Chapter election time is coming near. So happily, we don't have politicians talking to you and making promises or anything like that. So we have that going for us. But in June, we'll have a meeting yet to be announced, at which we will have our election. And what we are electing is the chapter officers, the section officers, and also committee members. There are 10 committee members, and we elect half of them at each year, one on an odd year basis, one on an even year basis. So we'll be putting the slate as we have it now of people who we've already identified who are interested in those positions up on our website. If anyone is interested in joining the work of the committee, we would welcome you to you can just click on the email for me and I can forward that on, and we'll get you into that list as well. Or if you have people that you are particularly interested in nominating for one of the officer slots, let us know. At this point, I think I will hand over to Rick Chin, who has a couple of announcements, and we're going to do a count of AES members, and then we'll be moving on from there.
So let's see. The announcement is this stack of CDs, and this is provided by Mike Metesky, who's a member of the committee and studio owner, and this is music contributed by people who have recorded it at his studio. And the idea is that you're welcome to donate money to the relief effort at OSO. There's two websites given on the back of the disc. You're welcome to take a disc. You don't have to take the disc. It doesn't matter whether you contribute or not. If you want to contribute, there's no minimum, and of course there's no maximum. So anyway, those are there. Okay, so I need to know how many people are AES members by show of hands.
Oh, I gotta count that. And there's a lot of them, so.
Wow. One, two, three, this is good.
Four, five, six, seven.
Okay, thank you. There's still more.
And there's some
We have one in the room and me also.
Okay, so plus two.
Okay. Maybe we should do our election meeting here.
Yeah. And let's see. Usually we do a ring around the room, but to save time, we're going to do this just by a show of hands. So if you're in the recording industry somehow, stick your hand up. And live sound, musicians. What have I left out?
Education.
Education, thank you. Wannabes?
Education's good.
Retail store?
Retail.
Acoustics.
Let's see, government agencies?
Put your head down.
Okay. Geeks and nerds.
There you go.
I are that. Okay, shall we go?
Yes, and Rich will now. Well, I'd like to thank Ken and Matt for taking the time to drive up. They actually made the drive during probably the worst, time of the day from Olympia to come up here and present to us tonight about ribbon microphones. Ken has worked in the industry for more than 20 plus years, managed his own MI store, owns his own studio, and has done live sound for many years. Currently, he's the guy that answers the phone if you call Cascade Microphones. Literally, you're going to hear his bright, shining voice there no matter when you call, because he just relentlessly picks it up. He's a great guy to work with. I've had the opportunity to work with him over the last few years with Lunchbox Audio, and just the mics are great. We've been really happy with them at Lunchbox Audio, so... Thanks again for coming, Ken and Matt, and we look forward to hearing it.
Okay, so I guess I will now
use the
lap. Okay. So I think the easiest way to do this is to find out how much people have used ribbon microphones before. So just from a show of hands, who owns ribbon microphones here? Good, quite a few people. How many people do recording with ribbons? And anybody do live sound with ribbons? Okay. So let's talk a little bit about what ribbon microphones are good for and why they're so popular again. Over the years, as you probably know, or going back in history, ribbon microphones were one of the first microphones made. And they're delicate, or they were delicate. You know, they were easily damaged, easily manipulated in such a way that they wouldn't be very useful to people. And, you know, if you went out on tour with ribbon microphones, you could have some difficulties. It wouldn't be a good thing sometimes. So people would tour with 10 of them or something. And those days have gone by for a variety of reasons. And I kind of want to talk, first of all, a little bit about the technology and what's changed. And I have some ribbons here. This is the ribbon that is in our Fathead microphone, which is this microphone. And this is kind of the microphone that most people know us for. It's our top-selling microphone. It's technically a medium ribbon, although some people refer to it as a short ribbon. There are some shorter ribbons. There's very few companies that make shorter ribbons. And there are a lot of longer ribbons, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. So this is the motor, and I'm going to pass this around here in a little bit. And I included some examples of motors that are not in such great shape, so you can see that as well, because I get asked that question a lot. What's changed the most in ribbon microphones are the magnets. Neodymium magnets have allowed ribbon microphones really to be produced at a cost and a way that makes it so that people like you and me can afford them. Because I don't know how many people here have bought expensive ribbons. I would guess that some of those people who have raised their hands before own some of the more expensive ribbons. Some people probably own some of the less expensive ribbons. Our price point is basically from around $200 on up to about $500. So we're considered fairly affordable in the ribbon market. I'm going to pass this around so you can look at it. The one that's furthest, depending on how you're looking at it, this direction is the one that's in the best shape. And as you go around, you can see them slowly degrade. And how many people think that you can't use phantom power with ribbon microphones? Yeah, that's the question. So in modern ribbon microphones, phantom power is not a taboo. You're not going to generally blow up a microphone with phantom power, which is a good thing. The old ones, not so much. You could blow them up. That was one of the things that did blow them up. And if you look at the ribbon that would be on the furthest right, that's a blown up ribbon with basically through a patch bay. So if you, that's the only way that you can really short a ribbon microphone, either that or a bad mic cable. And that's really the only way that you can short and blow up a ribbon. And you'll see it. It's completely gone in the middle. It's kind of interesting. The ones in the center are stretched. One's really just stretched and dropped. And that's what happens with air. And the other one has lost its corrugation. So really what makes a ribbon microphone work is it's suspended between magnets and it vibrates. And if it didn't have any corrugation, it would be so stiff it wouldn't move. So it's a corrugation that actually helps the ribbon vibrate and create sound. Anybody familiar with the physics of ribbon microphones here? Is there anything? Well, I'll teach you a little bit. So basically, you have a ribbon that's a certain length, and one of the big things is frequency response in ribbon microphones. I mean, people know they generally don't have tons of top end. And really, the best way to describe it, the reason why, is the top end is limited both by the thickness of the ribbon and the amount of time it takes sound to come in one end and come back from the other end, and then the physical size. And basically what happens is there's a formula, which I don't know off the top of my head, because just so you know, I'm not a mic designer or engineer, I'm a user. And so we're going to go into talking about using these in a little bit. But what does happen is sound comes in this way, it works its way around the magnet and comes back the other way. And there's a point that you can figure out that when the length of the ribbon and the time it takes to go around line up, the top end frequency is canceled. And that's just physics.
Is it closed back or
mostly? No, it's just open, so there's an air gap, so it's vibrating in between.
Okay.
And the ribbon's suspended on the magnets. This is actually a dual ribbon that I'm showing you here.
Okay.
So it's a little different, but just imagine it would be one end. And so it'll come in one side, come back the other side, and again, depending upon how thick the ribbon is, how wide this structure is, and how long the ribbon is, really determines the frequency response of a ribbon microphone. So you can get some more top end by making really thin ribbons. You can make the ribbons a little bit longer. You can make the ribbons a little bit, the magnets a little bit thinner. You know, thinner would increase top end frequency response. But as you try to squeeze out more and more top end, obviously you get more and more delicate. So.
Do you lose any bottom end anymore?
It's the bottom end doesn't, because the bottom end wave is so long, that's not really an issue. You can go online. I mean, I have the formula printed out and I could share it with people who would be interested. But the top end is really what gets limited just because the waves are so much shorter, and it's easy for this distance to limit the top end a lot more than the bottom end. They actually have to equal up. Yes?
Do these guys require a special preamp?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. The general answer is yes and no. So really no real specifics. The basic guts of a ribbon microphone, I mean, this is it. It doesn't matter if you buy our brand, another brand, a brand that costs you, you know, $2,000, or a ribbon microphone that costs you $100. Of course, the parts will be different, but it's a ribbon, a transformer, and a connector. I mean, it's very, very simple in design. We'll pass it around so you can get a look. It's one of the great things about ribbon microphones.
What's the material the ribbon's made out of?
Aluminum. Yeah, so it's a corrugated aluminum. Okay. And the magnets are neodymium.
And is that the same as the original ones?
Mm-hmm. That technology, other than being able to get a more consistent thin aluminum and a more consistent corrugation, really hasn't changed. So why are ribbons popular? How many people record with digital audio systems, like not to tape? That's most people, right? So, you know, ribbons basically bring some of the tape compression that people love back into the recording process, because as they vibrate, they also compress sound. And that is one of the cool things about them. So over the last 15 years, as people's home studios have gotten popular and digital recordings gotten more popular and more doable, ribbon microphones have become more popular. And quite frankly, the owner of the company made the right product at the right time. You know, he started this a while ago before there were a lot of ribbon companies. There were some, but he was kind of the first one to figure out how to make a good low-end ribbon microphone. There are some bad low-end ribbon microphones out there. There still are, quite frankly. One of the more popular ways, you know, ribbon microphones are figure eight. I mean, for the most part. There are some, which people probably know, where you can baffle the back and you can make them cardioid and you can do all sorts of things. But a straight ribbon microphone is figure eight. Anyone know the difference between an offset ribbon and a symmetrical ribbon?
You do.
I do.
Does an offset ribbon have a different frequency response from one side as opposed to the other because of the baffling or how it's...
It's not the baffling, actually. It's how the ribbon's set inside the magnet. And you can actually get it a little bit brighter on the front side and darker on the back side by moving this ribbon forward in the magnet structure.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And so that's what Royer does. And it's a good design. There are trade-offs, though. So in our microphone, basically, sounds identical front and back, and it's completely null around here. There is no sound. And that can be very useful in a lot of situations, as you can imagine.
Could you have a dual ribbon mic with the diaphragms? The ribbon's a bit different, so you could get a little bit maybe better on the frequency response, more optimized?
You might be able to do that, but let's talk a little bit about... I mean, one of the big things that people don't understand in recording is phase. And phase is present in everything that you record. And so a symmetrical ribbon really is the most phase-coherent microphone that you could probably get. You know, maybe some omnidirectional microphones as well. A cardioid microphone basically makes a cardioid pattern by messing with phase. And condenser microphones basically use EQ, which also messes with phase. So you can do great stereo recordings this way. And again, if you did your design, you would have phase anomalies. So... Pat Metheny went on tour, and anybody see his orchestration tour? Did anybody ever see it online? They had it's crazy. He went into the huge theaters and put up, I think, 20 boxes of mechanical instruments. And, yeah, you remember that? And then basically stood in front and basically made a big beatbox. That was his tour. And, you know, he just sat there and played all these different things, and things were going mechanically. And our microphones were the microphone on stage. And there were two reasons the sound guy decided on doing that. But the biggest thing was having this null and the boxes right next to each other. He could place the microphones in such a way that he didn't get any crosstalk from box to box. And, you know, and he couldn't do that. He tried Neumanns. He tried Sennheisers. He tried... you know, $5,000 microphones. He could have rented anything and ended up with 20 of our microphones on stage because of that. And also he likes the sound of them. So that's one of the great things you can do. Anybody do mid-side miking? Okay, so you want to talk about mid-side miking? Why not? All right, so mid-side miking is a technique It was developed by Alan Blumlein in the 20s, before figure eight microphones existed. So the gentleman who thought this concept up thought it up without the technology to actually test it, and he patented it. Pretty smart guy, I think, you know? And so basically the way it works is that you have a side microphone, and it has to be a figure eight microphone, and you have a mid microphone, which can be cardioid or it can be figure eight. Really, it's up to you. Most people would probably use a cardioid. I use two ribbons because I like the way they sound. And so you would take your source, and if I had another, let's go like this, and you would line them up as close as possible without touching them. And so if you had an orchestra and you were basically recording them, you would record, and let's say you had, you could either do this with a decoder, but I'm going to use Pro Tools as an example because that's what I record with these days. You would record your mid mic on one channel, and you would record this bottom mic on another channel. And then you would basically copy this track with the side microphone and flip the phase and spread it out. And why is that cool? Well, it's cool for a couple reasons. Number one, you have control of the stereo field after you record, right? You can move the stereo field as tight or as wide as you want after the fact. You're not tied into how you position the microphones in that in this method. The sound basically that you're hearing going in this way and going in that way is what's coming from one direction and going to the other direction. That's why flipping the phase and spreading them out makes it work. It's quite brilliant if you think about it. The other thing is it's 100% mono compatible. So if you're going to mono at the end of the day, you're not going to have any problems. It's been used in film a lot. It's a really typical thing to use in film, but it's become really popular in music as well. And I'll play you a clip later. Hopefully I'll get signal back here of the Wood Brothers, who did a record with a lot of our microphones, and a lot of what they did was mid-side miking. Let's see. Let's talk about the question came up about preamps. So a ribbon microphone has the ribbon itself puts out a very low current, very low. And so it needs a step-up transformer. And the step-up transformer normally boosts the signal 37 times. Yes? I have a question? No. Okay. So basically, you'll get microphones with an ohm rating between 150 to 300 ohms on a ribbon microphone. And if the way preamps work, if you have, let's say, a preamp that has an input of 600 ohms or 900 ohms, you're going to start to load that ribbon down. You're actually going to restrict the movement of the ribbon. As you go up, the ribbon's going to actually move more freely. So even like the nice thing, again, about modern technology is even something like the Mackie Onyx here, which I have, it's a 2.7K ohm rating on the input, which is extremely high, actually. So you can get fancy preamps. You can get really good preamps. You can get some consumer preamps. They will all work. There are some out there that won't work. Some really cheap ones will actually restrict the ribbon and make your ribbon sound darker. And I actually do that to a dynamic microphone as well. If you actually get into a situation where you have the same ohmage as the output of the microphone, you'll lose a ton of sound. And that's something that's been, that was presented as an AES paper years ago by the gentleman who designed RCA microphones. Let's talk about the different types of ribbons a little bit. And I brought a few examples. There's long ribbons, short ribbons, there are dual ribbons. They all have their pluses and minuses. Like I said, a lot of people like the natural compression of ribbons and how fast they respond. So a short ribbon or a medium ribbon that would be like in this microphone would do that the best. So with percussive instruments, it's really popular. And also with electric guitar, if you know, depending on the style of guitar, they're really popular. When you get into the longer ribbons, you can get a little bit more frequency response, mainly because the magnets can actually be a little thinner. So if you look at that magnet here, you'll see, and it's the last one we can pass around, you can see that it's just a little bit thinner, and you get a little bit more top end out of them. The dual ribbons, like this, which we don't make at the moment, we are, yes?
Previous screen.
Oh, 14 seconds. Yeah, I guess this is just the
just
television.
In case.
Yeah.
You may want to wiggle something so you don't have to start it up.
Yeah. I don't think it's my.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. Did come back. There it goes.
You're back.
I'm back. Okay, thank you. So the dual ribbons, according to the people who use them a lot, and I've used them a little bit, give more perspective to the sound. It's kind of hard to explain, but anyone know who Mike Poole is? Anyone know who Buddy Miller is? Buddy Miller is, you know, he's probably the top Nashville producer at the moment. Mike Poole is his engineer. And he told me years ago, he goes, I just love dual ribbons for the perspective it gives. So I think that's one of those terms that I can't really...
But that's not stereo or anything.
That's not stereo. There are stereo ribbons, which are basically just two ribbons in one. I'm going to play a track here if I can find it. And so you can kind of get an example of what they sound like. And no, that's not what I want. No, it opened up all of them. Hopefully we'll get something to play here in a minute. Give me a second.
Up the place. I'll go in early and I'll come home late. And one thing I never forget is a face. And you keep me around. You keep me around. Although I'm sad, I'm not getting away. Sitting, you wonder how long I'm gonna stay. While I show you the rainbow and all shades of gray. Well, you keep me around. You keep me around. Although I'm faint and I might be blind, but I'm the one that's gonna keep towing the line. And you land on your feet almost every time. To keep me around.
Version number two, and I'll go what's been done here and when we're done here.
Griezzato, you make me holler. Blew me a kiss and I threw you a dollar. You had eyes like deep cold water. Griezzato, from the minute I saw, I knew I had to have, I couldn't help but want to. Well, I fell in love and I never once falter. Griezzato.
says, I had an angry father. He said, you keep away from my daughter. Then he made her sell the ring that I bought her. So Griselda, she said, tomorrow we meet me at midnight at old man Potter's. We'll run away and we'll marry each other. Griselda.
Okay, so just to talk a little bit about those two. The second one was a gentleman named Glenn Phillips. Anyone familiar with him? Toad the Wet Sprocket. Yep, so that's him. And I actually met him at AES probably 4 years ago. And he came by our booth and was chatting and wanting to know about ribbon microphones. And I didn't know who it was, actually, at the time. And just a real nice guy, and I talked to him a bunch, and he went on his way, and last year, about a year ago, I got an email because I'd given him a card and said, you have any questions, you know, feel free to call me up, and said, hey, I made this record I want you to know about. So one microphone, one stereo ribbon microphone. He basically set everybody up in a room, moved them around till he got just the way he wanted, got his voice the way he wanted. He had an engineer. Took him 2 days. Five people, eight songs. It was great. Mixed, done. All in one. Just boom. No digital hokey pokey. The reason why he did it is because they were actually working on a new Wet Sprocket album, and he was getting bogged down in the process, as probably all of you know about. You sit there and you record, and it's just, you know, and you cut things out, and you put things in. Sometimes you get back to the same place you were at 3 months ago and you're wondering what you're doing. And he just wanted to make a record and be done with it. So it's really a cool project. It was great for us. I had no idea. I'll tell you, we're a small company. And over the years, those are the kind of cool things that have happened to us. I mean, we didn't go out and ask him to do this video for us. We didn't know he was doing it. We had no idea he was doing a record like that. And I just get an email in my inbox one day with a link to it telling me it's done. And, you know, thanks for helping me out a couple years ago. The first project there that I showed you, or the first record, that's the Wood Brothers. Anyone familiar with them? Fairly well-known, now Nashville-based band. Really cool guys. The producer on that is Buddy Miller, who I talked about before. So when I went to Cascade, probably, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, I had known the owner for a while, and he was like, I need some help, and he just basically wanted somebody to take over the day-to-day thing. And I said, well, sure, maybe that might be something, a new challenge for me. You know, I had been running an MI store for a long time and knew the business fairly well, and I liked the products, and I actually been going to trade shows for them, so I knew these products. And so I start there, and I'm looking through the database of, you know, who's bought microphones, because we do sell direct as well as through value dealer networks like Rich. And I go down the list, and there's Buddy Miller's name. And I'm like, Buddy Miller, Nashville, Tennessee. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, huh, really? Is that, that's not the same Buddy Miller, is it? The guy who's on everybody's record? And sure enough, it was. And I talked to him and started a relationship with him. Just, and again, very organic. Not, you know, he was like, well, I'm so glad to hear from you. And, you know, in a small business that makes a good product at a good value, that's really the best feedback you can get is from people like that.
Was that, how many mics were on that? It looked like only one.
So the Wood Brothers video there, I have to admit to you that that's a video shot after the fact. And basically, I got the track sheet from them. Our microphones were used as drum overheads. They were used on the horns. They were used on the lead vocal. They were used on the upright bass. They were used on just about everything, except for the electric guitar, which I found very funny, actually, because that's what most people use our microphones
really
for.
Was he really that distance away from the mic?
There's another video which shows him singing into it, and he's about this distance away. They have great preamps in that room and a great room. The drums were done, which is pretty typical, and I didn't bring one because actually I'm out of them. I don't know if Rich carries them, but there are some boxes that basically can make your ribbons into an active ribbon. So, and I brought an example. We have an active ribbon. It's actually active or passive. It's called a cloud lifter is one of them. And it basically does a few interesting things. But one thing it does do is change the microphone so it reacts like a condenser microphone. And so on the drum overheads, that's what he used, a pair of these with cloud lifters. And he, that's pretty much what they use for their drum sound. You can hear this. You know, it's a different kind of vibe. It's not for everybody. I mean, you're not going to record Metallica drums with ribbon microphones. It's just not going to cut the same way. But they did record, actually, their guitars with ribbons. Yeah.
So when you say it it makes it sound more like a condenser microphone, what is
it? No, react more like a condenser microphone. So it means that instead of having to get so much preamp gain, because you're still looking at, I talked a little bit about ohmage and preamps. I kind of left that pretty quickly. But instead of really worrying about, ribbons have a fairly low output, like I mentioned, and you need, you know, most people say you need 60 dBs of clean gain. And as you probably know, when you start to go up on a preamp, 30, 40, 50 dBs, you can run into some noise issues and stuff. Ribbon microphones on their own, these guys are very quiet because, as you can see, there's really nothing to them. There's nothing to create noise. And I'll get the phone call. I'll say it's like clockwork every 2 weeks. I bought your microphone and it's noisy. And I'll say, okay, how are we running it? What are we recording with it? How are you using it? And after we go through the steps, it's no longer the microphone's noisy, just the way people are using them. It might not either be right for a ribbon microphone or they might not have the right equipment. Yes?
What's the... I haven't really got a chance to work with ribbon mics at all. What's the proximity effect like?
So that's another great thing to talk about. We'll have, I don't know if we have our guitar player here or not.
Probably in the next 20 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, so we're going to have a guitar player hopefully come in, and we can do some of that stuff. And I have these set up so people will be able to go in and talk to them. But proximity effect basically is low-end response. That's really what happens. And so the closer you get to these, the more low end you get, the further away you put them, the less low end. And to me, the more balanced it gets. And that really is a key thing to a preamp with either high gain or using a device like a cloud lifter. Let's say you want to record a finger style, or let's say a strumming acoustic guitar. And to get enough gain, you put the microphone, you know, like here, and you're playing it, and you're like, man, that just doesn't sound very good. It's kind of too boomy, and it's not really the sound I want. And you get it out here, and then you have to get so much gain with your preamp that it's not working because you're getting either noise from the preamp or just not enough gain, period. So a device like a cloud lifter or a good preamp with a lot of gain will allow you to position the microphone more properly for what you're using it for.
What is the cloud lifter?
Cloud lifter is basically, it's a box. So the microphone plugs into this little box, and it's basically, it's not this, but it's like this. It would have, so this part on this microphone with the transformer, it's pretty close to this actually, but it's not this. Because it's, the cloud lifter is an old design. But we have a ribbon, we have our transformer, like what I've been passing around, right? And there's a circuit board on here. And this circuit board has caps and the whole deal to basically make an active ribbon. So you throw phantom power in here, and you basically get 25 dBs of gain.
Is that bypass the transformer?
No, it does not. Yep. No, so... And I'll pass this around. This actually has a switch where you can put it active or passive mode and make use of the transformer. So this is kind of an exciting design. Like, we got asked a lot, why don't you guys make an active microphone? And there are some great active ribbons. Anybody use an active ribbon? Which one do you use?
R122.
Yeah. Have you ever found it to be too hot for some sources?
Yes.
Yes. So we did too. So we were like, well, we could make an active ribbon and just do like everybody else does and call it that, and you buy your active ribbon and off you go. And if it's too hot for your source, well, can't use our microphone, go out and find another one. Or we can make a little, we put the switch inside, because if you hit a switch on the outside of this and you had your preamp up and somebody had headphones on, it would be bad news. And so seriously, it would be. And so we thought a lot about it. We could have put a switch on the outside, but we basically didn't want to ruin somebody's life. And so we put the switch on the inside. Some people might find it a little cumbersome, but the end story to this microphone is that you can use it on any source. It's really pretty cool in that way. And I'll pass it around. I have it unscrewed. And those microphones that you were seeing in that video, that they were singing around, that's basically this microphone.
When you talk about compression, what kind of SPLs are you talking for that to start compressing?
Well, the ribbon will compress on its own fairly quiet because it's vibrating, and that is in itself starting compression. So a ribbon microphone can handle, or ours can handle, 150 dB, 135, 40, loud sound sources, as long as there's no air being moved.
We talked about the compression sound.
Right, so the compression sound, that's just a matter of, it compresses. It really...
somewhat of a non-linear.
So the more sound pressure you have, the more compression you will get.
The less audio output, the more sound in.
Yeah. It's a slight compression. It's not like putting a compressor on stuff. Mm-hmm. It's more like what a tape machine does. It's subtle, but it's nice. Yeah, it's a character.
I would imagine it's dependent on the strength of the ribbon or how tight it is.
Well, the ribbon hopefully is tight.
Yeah.
It's corrugated. If the ribbon's not tight, you're going to end up with a bad sound.
So, stupid question, but aluminum is typically not viewed as magnetic, right? So what am I missing?
It's a conductor, yeah. And it's stretched, so it's stretched, it's held in place, so it's not floating.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a conductor along with along with the magnets.
It's a generator.
Okay.
That's why you call it a motor.
Yeah. Yeah, it's dependent upon the whole system. Yes?
I have a couple of questions about the ribbon. The first one pertains to the samples that you brought around that went from a good one to a bad one.
Yeah.
And you can see the failure mode seems to appear always in the center and work its way out from the center. First you get some flattening.
Right.
And then it just gets disintegration. So I'm curious about that. And I'm also curious about the corrugations themselves, since they're under tension. Would that have a tendency to not stretching, I'm thinking more in terms of mechanical resonance.
They will have a little bit of mechanical resonance. So you have to, and again, this is where I am not an engineer, so I don't know the correct way to phrase it, but you have to do it correctly. That's what makes doing, say you want to make your own ribbon, your own motor, you can buy the parts, but actually corrugating the aluminum properly is really what stops most people. As far as the failure goes, what you're looking at is not really sequential. There are three different modes there. The one that's all the way blown is blown. You don't see that a lot. We kind of laugh when we get those into the shop. It's like, oh, well, somebody really messed up here, and it's, like I said, it's pretty much on a patch bay. And it just blows the ribbon apart and it doesn't work. And that's that. Really what we see most common is a little bit of sag. That most of the time is a pulse of wind or I go to trade shows, and inevitably, somebody goes up to our microphones and he goes, and I'm like, all right, well, that's shot, and then I have to replace the ribbon, and, it just sucks, but it's part of the deal,
Is that all it takes, though?
Yeah.
Just one blow?
Just one good blow, and you'll pop it. It's really, you really shouldn't blow into a microphone, period. 2.5 microns. So, there are some that are thinner. There are some that are made thinner. They're like under 2. Most people who do the research on it say between 2 and 3 is kind of ideal. And we have a live ribbon that's actually 5 microns. I don't really like the sound of it that much. But people do buy it. People do use it. It does hold up, I guess, a little bit better. Ours went on a tour with Steely Dan for 2 years. 6 microphones, and we didn't replace 1 ribbon. I mean, you know, that's pretty good, I think. You know, so they hold up, and you know, as long as you keep relatively good care. Buddy Miller toured with them for 5 years. I've never replaced a ribbon on his microphones.
What's the cost to repair one versus?
So that's a good question. Some manufacturers will charge you a lot of money to repair a ribbon, and they'll make it spooky science. Really, seriously, and they'll tell you that they're getting in there, and I mean, I know some people work really hard on their product, and there are differences for sure. Now, whether you consider one thing to be better or worse, I think subjective, right? There are just differences in sound, and I would urge everybody to just listen to what those differences are. But for us, we just replace the whole motor, and we replace it for $75 normally. So it brings the microphone back up to full spec. And they're not toys. I mean, they do sound good. They're good microphones. They don't have to cost an arm and a leg. The guy that started our company was a hobby musician. I mean, that's what he did. I mean, and he worked in other industries. And he loved, you know, actually, when I worked at the store I worked at, I sold him a whole recording system that got him started in the whole thing. And he loved recording, and he went out to try to get a ribbon microphone, and it was $2,000 or $1,500. Over time, he actually started his own little pro audio company, basically a little bit like Rich's, selling pro audio gear on the internet when it was in its early phases. And he basically contacted with some manufacturers overseas about getting, really he was looking for inexpensive condenser microphones to throw in to give people more value. And one of the things that came over in the mail was from China was a ribbon microphone. And he looked at it and said, hey, this is pretty cool. You know, this is a ribbon microphone. And all I've seen are ribbon microphones. I didn't even know these things existed. And he listened to it and he goes, well, that doesn't sound very good, really. And so he basically worked with the people over there to actually make good ribbons. And then he found transformers from another place and basically put the whole thing kind of together in a package where people could buy them, relatively inexpensive. And that's, you know, I guess this is the commercial side of my spiel, but I feel like I should say.
Yeah, if you have one or two of those really old ones to compare against to see how...
Well, yeah, we do that. At a trade show, you can, if you went up to our booth, and I didn't bring it with me here because, quite frankly, I actually didn't have access to it when I left. I have audio samples. Now, I have audio samples here, and I might play them for you in a little bit, of our microphone and, say, a Royer, and our microphone and say, a Coles. We don't put those on the internet, and we don't really generally share those for a number of reasons, but mostly because, really, you know, it is a family, and they're just, again, different colors of the same thing, but it's good for people to know. And there's no reason why you can't own our microphone. You can't own a Royer if you want. You can't own a Coles. It's kind of all works together. Ours are voiced a little bit different. Ours are symmetrical ribbons and Royers are offset. There are reasons why you might want our microphone sometime and you might want a Royer other times. They all have their own plays. If anybody wants to hear some of those, I can play them.
Yeah.
Or
listen to them.
So these are manufactured offshore? Or?
So, yeah. So what happens is, and we've tried this a number of different ways. I mean, we've actually tried getting the microphones, because really the part that we're interested in is the body. Hard to manufacture the body and the ribbon here right now. The reasons have to do a lot with just manufacturing plants in America. We don't sell 10,000 microphones a month. If we did, we could probably make them in the States, believe it or not. It might cost us a little bit more, but we're the kind of company that probably would. The thing is, with American factories, they can't really switch over fast. The thing they can do in China is they can make our microphones for a week at a time, every 2 months, and then go on and do other stuff. So we split a factory with a couple other microphone manufacturers. We have a software over there called SoundCheck. It's what's used in most of the speaker manufacturers and top-end microphone manufacturers in the world. It's expensive software. It costs like $20,000, and we kind of split that amongst the other manufacturers that shall remain nameless, and in our small factory. And basically, every microphone is put together and checked through sound check there. And when it leaves, it's at spec. And then basically, we do another check, and it's actually not as thorough as the check they do over there for a number of reasons. Number one, we just haven't been able to afford yet another copy of that software. It's expensive. So we have a different analyzer. We also do a phase check. We make sure, and we do a visual check to make sure that everything lines up. And I will tell you that, really, we have a very low failure rate. Really, very few of our microphones come in defective for that reason. We found that when we basically had the microphones come in without transformers, without being checked through that software, we had a higher failure rate. So they're pulling a lot off there and dealing with it, which is nice for us. Yes?
Do you know what the factory is like there, or like what the working?
Well, the only thing that I know, well, I know it's a small factory. The one of the other manufacturers that I have, and I've seen pictures of it, one of the other manufacturers we work with has been over there a number of times. They're a microphone company in Canada, and he's an alternative type person, is, you know, and a forward thinker. And he said it looked great when he was there. And I have routine conversations with a number of the people in the factory. You know, whether or not that is absolutely true and everybody's happy with their job, probably not. But you know, you could walk into pretty much any industry here and maybe find out a lot about it. But I don't think it's not the type of thing where I think people are working 20 hours a day making microphones.
It's not Foxconn.
Yeah, it's not Foxconn. It's not. And the fact is, you know, like I said, the factory was sort of carefully selected. And I am in contact with another person. He goes over there and he brings music recorded with the microphones so that the people who are making them actually have a connection. You know, they've seen all these videos. They have CDs. We send them over there, projects we know that have been done with our microphones or with their microphones. And so there is a connection between the people making them and the stuff that's coming out. So that part's pretty cool. Yes?
Question on, you know, you said they're somewhat delicate but not real delicate. Mm-hmm. As far as storage and transporting, are there
guidelines? So the old guidelines were, you never store a ribbon like this because it's more likely to sag. You would always store it vertically. And I would say probably if you're going to put your ribbon away and never not use it for 6 months, you would want to store it this way. But the strength of the magnets now and the way that they're constructed, that's no longer the case. They can be perfectly happy like this for quite a long time. So they're a lot hardier than they were. That's one of the great things about it. And it's, like I said, one of the things that's really changed over the years in ribbon manufacturing.
Can you speak to the aluminum magnetic situation again, just because it's a conductor, it's still not completely clear.
The best way I can do it is looking at my notes, but basically think of you want me to read you, I can read it to you verbatim, and it might make more sense if you give me a minute to find it. Yeah, it's almost like a guitar pickup. It's pretty similar to that.
To what?
To a guitar pickup. Yeah.
Something's vibrating and there's different stuff that's vibrating current.
When current goes through,
it doesn't have to be magnetic. It just has to be conductive.
Yeah.
When current goes through the
So I'll just kind of read what the notes that I, and again, I kind of know this, but it's easier for me to read it. So they operate basically on electromagnetic induction. When you place a moving conductive body into a permanent magnetic field, the body generates an electric signal. Simple harmonic motion of the body generates the electric signal of the same form. This is the same principle used in pickup string interaction in electric guitars. The heart of the ribbon microphone is the motor, the assembly, that actually transforms the kinetic energy of the sound wave into an electric signal. The ribbon motor consists of a very thin 1.5 to 5 microns aluminum foil strip positioned between two permanent magnets. The foil vibrates when exposed to a sound source. A flat piece of ribbon can hardly vibrate, so that's why you have to corrugate it. And then corrugated foil strip is called the ribbon. The ribbon functions similar to the string of an electric guitar. The difference is that in the case of an electric guitar, the signal gets induced in the wire wound in the coil of the pickup. But in this case, the signal gets induced in the aluminum ribbon itself. Such approach gives a very high, inertly, and authenticity of the signal, which is not the case in electric guitar, but it provides a very low output. So, I mean, that's basically the mechanics of it. I can't really say it any differently than that. That's why.
So Faraday's law, in a dynamic microphone, you have a voice coil. Right?
Yeah.
So you have a magnet moving back and forth
inside
of an electromagnetic field.
Yeah.
So this sounds quite similar.
It's quite similar. It's
instead of a coil moving
this
way, it's a ribbon.
Yep, vibrating that way. It's exactly right.
But I don't know my science. I didn't know that aluminum was a conductor, but you're saying that aluminum is a conductor.
Yep.
Your house is wired with aluminum. Okay. There you go.
That's too much.
Reminds me about half a mile.
Okay.
Right. Or
right.
Or
so basically, you're ready to coil your
aluminum. Right.
Okay. I'll play you a couple of... I'll play you a couple of quick sound samples if you guys are interested. Can you tell me? And again, these are the kind of things, once I get this to actually work, hopefully. This was a... So this is our fat thing. This is a Royer, once I can click on it. Hopefully. Yeah, it's giving me a difficult time. There we go.
Is that two mics on the same amplifier for the same performance?
Yeah. And then let's try.
Can you go back to the first one again now that we've heard that?
Yeah. Except it stopped working on me. Figure out why. This is not the best way to be doing this, I'll tell you that. After I set it up, I was like, I wouldn't do this again. That's ours.
If you actually start the slideshow, you won't get all those editing options for it.
Yeah, you know, and but I can't play the parts with it. I found that out. That's a Gomez. This is the Royer doing the same thing, hopefully. Back to our Gomez. Yeah. And that's a 121 through a Strat. And we'll go up to a Gomez PRS. Thank you. straight to a Coles. Does that make sense?
How much is a Royer? Is that an expensive microphone?
So a Royer is, yeah, that Royer is $1,295. The Fathead's $379. You know? I mean, it makes you wonder. Yes, that does. It made the guy who started the company wonder. The Coles are also fairly expensive. They're both great microphones, though. So, I get calls from people who use who have, what's the best way to say this? They're professionals, they're in the industry, and they use our microphones a lot because they like them, but they have to own other microphones because they have the name. And I'm sure some of you guys who are in the business know about that. And I just got a call from a drummer the other day, same type of thing. Any questions?
When you mentioned that people said that they didn't work, it was usually because they didn't have them placed properly and it was way too much gain to bring the noise close. So
well, I was saying, yeah, there, it can be a combination of things, but they do have low output on their own. Mm-hmm. So if you have a quiet sound source, you need either a very good preamp or you need a way to bring the gain of the microphone up very cleanly, you know, that... The cloud lifter is basically, or that active circuit, is just a preamp circuit that's very clean. It also changes the output ohmage of the microphone, so it's more easily driven by most modern preamps.
Yeah, I would imagine there's nothing more frustrating than somebody just saying, sounds bad.
Yeah, but you know, it's not for everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we sell a microphone, somebody can't use it, we'll happily take it back. I mean, I don't want... Somebody looking, I mean, you know, this company I work for, I don't want them staring at this and thinking, oh, God, I can't use this thing, and thinking of us every time. So we just take them back, you know. Yeah, it doesn't really happen, but it does occasionally. Yes, sir.
I just want to make a comment. I used to work in the microphone business, and we were talking a minute ago about relative cost between one brand and another. One of the things that I think we should bring into the conversation is unit-to-unit matching. If I manufacture 1,000 microphones and I've got a really tight spec, well, the ones that fall into that spec is going to be a certain percentage of my overall production run. Those are going to cost more.
Yep.
Now, if you can tolerate less unit-to-unit matching, then now we can bring the price down because there's a lot more fallouts there that I can move in my Category B, and then Category C I can sell through Radio Shack.
Right. Yeah, and there are microphones that would be more, that would be more important. I don't know the best way to say this, but there's a little bit more leeway in these microphones for sure, and in ribbon microphones in general. We do sell pairs a lot, and the pairs, you know, that's like one of our popular things for various stereo items. I mean, I rarely get the phone call. I can probably count on one hand the times that I've gotten a phone call where somebody said that they were unusable because of a difference from microphone to microphone. And yeah, it might not be the tightest spec, but it's certainly, again, usable. There's certainly a point where you can say, well, 98% of the people can use it with this spec, and they can save X amount of dollars. And is that trade-off worthwhile?
I agree with you 100%. I don't think that you should be paying those kind of prices unless you have a critical need.
Yeah, and that's a factor. Yes, sir.
Typically, these are always on a stand, right?
You wouldn't be handling
them. What happens if you handle it? Does it
they've got a good amount of handling noise. I mean, it's not really made to be... You know, ribbon microphones aren't made to be, you know, crooned into like this.
How
much
handling noise does the motor not handle the movement?
If you go like this, you will create noise and movement within the. microphone. In fact, that's one little test that you can do if your ribbon is stretched and you go like this. You'll actually hear a swishing sound of the ribbon moving, you know, not tight in between the magnets.
And that's if you send it straight into a ribbon, you're going to blow the ribbon out anyway.
Yeah.
So you really don't want to.
Right, right. Now, what about if you were using it to mic a low-end instrument? Will the vibration cause it to get damaged, or you use the right kind?
Okay, so like I wouldn't put it like I wouldn't put it 6 inches in front of a kick drum. Okay, that would be bad. I've had people do it.
Yeah, that's
usually, and you know, then you have to have the talk with somebody. We give one free ribbon replacement for people who are just plain uninformed. Okay, you know, we'll just and if you blow your ribbon the first year, we'll replace it, no charge. But yeah, you can't really do that. Now, you can move this microphone actually out, you know, a couple of feet, and usually I'll tell people to put a pop filter in front of it, and it gives you a great result in the room.
I think to continue on his question, just a general question of fragility of the microphone, like SPL ceiling.
So, like I said before, you get 135 dB is really what they're rated for, but if you put it in the wrong place, you'll just... You know, it could be pretty low, and you can blow into it and do something bad or damage.
What's the low end cutoff about?
Well, the low end cutoff, there is a resonant frequency in a ribbon microphone, and it has to do, again, a little bit with the size of the ribbon, and actually the basket has something to do with it too. But again, in general, it depends. The longer ribbons will go down a little bit lower than the shorter ribbons. This goes down fairly flat to 50 hertz. It's really not, I mean, people do not ever say, wow, I wish I had more low end in my ribbon microphone. It's very rarely what we hear, but there is a low end limit to it, for sure. Yes?
Can you give general guidelines for mic technique for using it as a vocal mic?
Yes. A really good preamp. A pop filter, because, you know, really what you want to do is get to the place where the proximity effect is right for your voice. And it can do great things on the right voice, you know, the person's voice the right way. The Wood Brothers tried to tour with like Gomez over there live. I told him they couldn't do it. I said, you're crazy to even try. And he's like, well, we use it on the record. I just want to try. So they tried, and of course they couldn't do it. You really can't do it live, but you can in the studio. So a really good preamp. I like to use a cloud lifter or an active microphone a lot of times if I have it.
I haven't used a ribbon mic for vocals yet myself, but in choosing a mic for vocals, would a ribbon mic favor a female voice more than male voice or vice versa?
Well, anything.
What would be the kind of general rule there?
So, the general rule is if your voice is kind of nasally or you're kind of soprano and, you know, it's kind of a little bit grating, you know, anything that has, you know, a little bit of a kind of a weird kind of edge, it's going to smooth that out quite a bit. So, for the right vocalist, it can really do wonders.
Do you use one of those reflective?
I do. I use those a lot. We actually make one, but I use them a lot. I do a lot of different things. I was talking about the mid-side setup before and you know, I like having the matched microphones because I like symmetry, and you know, I like things being the same. And so I'll put a baffle even behind my mid-microphone. I'll just take even a mic stand and drape a blanket behind it to keep the back reflection from coming in. And it basically makes, you know, it tightens the pattern of the microphone. Part of it's how good your room sounds. Part of it is how much of the room you want. So it's a natural way of creating reverb. One thing I didn't mention on the that Wood Brothers record is they did a lot with placing these microphones in the room, too. And that was their reverb on the record. Okay. All right. So it seemed like maybe a couple more questions.
Sure.
you talked about the kind of the compression, mm-hmm. as I understand. Is that mostly, is it, I guess you could say it's the mass of the moving element creates some of that, and is that part of also what tames some of the high end?
It doesn't tame the high end. It just kind of smooths out the rough edges. And again, not everything can be explained on a clipboard, I don't think. You know, really, I don't know if you could. I mean, you could probably. To me, the way I picture is the wave just gets a little bit smoother, you know, and so some of those rough edges just get squished out a little bit more, and it just seems to work better. I know it's not very scientific, but what can I say? Yeah. All right. Well, I think I might be near the end of my time. I'm going to, when you guys do a break, I'm going to set these microphones up. There is one headphone to each microphone. And if people want to come in, you can, like, go check one, too. Don't worry. Just don't blow into them. But don't worry about blowing the ribbon. I'm not worried about it. I do this all the time. That's the way we set up in our trade shows.
Just don't sneeze.
And you can check them out if you want to listen to them at all.
So we've got there should be some water and some cookies back in the back.
Oh, that sounds good.
We'll be drying out water. About, let's say, 10 minutes or so, and then have time to keep going.
Yeah. I'll go. Let me get this. I'll get this and I'll tell you. Well done.